Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
You propose, from what I see after looking at your videos, that you are a big proponent of calories in versus calories out. Can you talk to us about that?
In terms of weight loss on its own, if we're looking at it from very, very base level, you need a negative energy balance to lose weight. They need to burn more calories than they consume, or consume less calories than they burn. So when people go down this route of continuously losing and gaining weight again and again, they get into this mental state of failure inside their own minds.
Do you have any techniques or any methods to kind of like reduce people's cravings?
Number one, I would actually look at sleep. And then second thing is looking at your foods during the day. Cravings might build up at night, but it might be more difficult to actually stick within caloric deficit.
I want you to break these two terms down for someone who's listening: front-loading protein and back-loading carbs. Are there any diets that are new and coming up that might be exciting to look at?
Honestly, I think that the optimizations around time-restricted eating is the best thing that is coming out that's most effective for most people. Being in a calorie deficit is the only thing that matters for you to be able to lose the weight, regardless of what kind of route you want to choose.
Welcome to the Shift with CJ podcast, where we explore big ideas and even bigger transformation. I'm your host, CJ, and today we're going to dive into the world of health and fitness, because today we have with us Dr. Azri Zakaria, who is awesome right now on social media. He's challenging a lot of conventional wisdom. He has a six pack. I mean, maybe he has an eight pack, but he looks really good on social media. He has a lot of knowledge to share. So Dr. Zakaria, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you having me on. I'm very happy to be here and very much appreciate the kind intro as well. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. What, do you have a nickname? Like, my name is Chiranjeev, but my name is CJ.
I just go by Azri.
Azri. Okay, so we'll refer to you as Azri in the show. Cool. Azri, now, when I look at your content, you have clearly established a very good transformation. What would be one of the reasons behind that?
So first of all, in terms of fat loss journey, let's say, that initially started out intentional with the goal of getting to a leaner state, but mainly out of the fear of staying fat my whole life, let's say. And you know, when you get to a point where you're overweight, out of breath, struggling to move, and just have belly rolls coming out the shirt, the clothes don't fit right anymore, and you're actually getting health concerns, even though I was young, that's where you really try and push into actually making a change so you just feel better, right? When you feel better, you work better, you perform better. Your, of course, cognitive performance improves, which downstream was very, very much needed in terms of the company itself, med school. So I was in med school, and that was a big, big part of, I would say, completing med school alongside the health business as well. That's where I really, really wanted to optimize. So essentially, that's where it kind of started, just out of pure need to actually lose the weight more than anything.
Mm-hmm. So when you started, did you buy any coaching programs? Were you familiar with exercise physiology? Did you hire a coach? Did you sign up in a program? How did you start?
Yeah, so I had coaches when I was losing weight, and even actually when I was gaining weight as well. So I actually did start off quite skinny, from around, I would say, 50 kilos, went up to 97 kilos at my heaviest as well. And then it was down to 75 kilos in a shorter period of time with more proper guidance. So I was studying nutrition, exercise alongside it as well, personal training qualifications, all of this stuff. And yeah, no, that was probably a big, big factor that did make some serious difference. Fortunately, he's passed away now, it's quite old, but one of the main things I feel is the actual accountability, guidance behind execution, and more direction, so you're not running fast in the wrong direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. In fact, when we look at recent data and all of the reasons why people start working out but they don't One of the reasons is because they don't know exactly what to do. So this is a man or woman who, you know, joins a gym, first day of new year, goes to the gym. After a month or two, the motivation goes a bit low and they're confused. And now every day they come to the gym, they're highly confused on what to do. So they decided to just leave the gym and walk away. Do you see this as a common theme in a lot of people that you have coached or people around your circle?
Yeah, 100%. So one of the biggest things I've probably seen is the straight road into misinformation because of the influence of social media out there. Now, at this point, anyone can speak loud enough and then their opinion is factual, which isn't actually the case, as we know from majority of the fitness industry right now. It's usually what's viral, trendy, or what's being pushed in terms of their own agenda, which actually has people very, very confused as to what's going to be actually productive. Because it's not just the exercise side of things which people are getting confused on. They initially overcomplicate the exercise part of things and assume that's the majority of the reason why they're stuck, when of course the nutrition side of things is going to be a heavy, heavy player in terms of weight loss. And I would say the main thing, as in technically someone can do zero exercise and fix up their nutrition, get in a deficit and lose weight, but they tend to go down the route of, you know, I really need to do 1,000 hours of cardio this week or I'm never going to lose the weight. And then that's where the overcomplication happens, mainly because of the amount and misinformation out there on social media as well.
Yeah, sometimes I believe we're meant to believe that, you know, these social media influencers, some of the fitness influencers, they're killing themselves, all the CrossFit athletes, and, you know, that's the way to go. But like, if you just want to live healthy and be, you know, not be overweight and not have all of those downstream hormonal impacts and blood sugar regulation impacts, then you don't need so much. But again, what you said is correct. Like one of the majority chunks of it is nutrition. Now, you propose, from what I see after looking at your videos, that you are a big proponent of calories in versus calories out. Can you talk to us about that, this whole calories in versus calories out?
Of course. So in terms of weight loss on its own, if we're looking at it from very, very base level, you need a negative energy balance to lose weight. So that's just scientific evidence, actual statement. So that's basically what is needed anyways for anyone, regardless of what they're doing. They need to burn more calories than they consume, or consume less calories than they burn. So essentially, that's always going to be the base level. That's not saying that everything else isn't important. That's not saying everything on top of that, the protein intake, the micronutrient intake, the exercise, sleep, meals. I'm not saying all of that isn't important, but where people really go wrong is the fad diets, the crazy workouts, in the hopes of that being productive for their weight loss goal without a calorie deficit being in place. So essentially, it's what I try and push out, mainly because most people in their initial stages of either being stuck for a long period of time or not starting and seeing results, the main issue is that they're not in a deficit to lose weight to begin with. So that's the main reason why I actually push that out more, because a lot of people are stuck in that sense. So outside of that, optimizations are going to be extremely important, especially with having a minimum amount of protein and let's say 0.8 grams to a gram per pound of lean body weight, let's say around there as a target for most people. And then of course, micronutrient intake, vegetables and fruits and everything that people already know is technically healthy. So the main thing is, a lot of people get on this roller coaster of extreme restriction where they are, let's say, trying to go keto. I'm not saying that this isn't good for cognitive performance or anything like that, but let's say they go extremely restrictive and they need to lose 50 pounds. They usually go down a lose, let's say 20, 30 pounds, whatever it is. They get down some weight and put it back on because what they started wasn't something they could stick to for the long term anyway. So it wasn't sustainable in the first place. So when people go down this route of continuously losing and gaining weight again and again, they get into this mental state of failure inside their own minds. And that's what really pushes people out of improving their fitness and improving on their goals in the first place. And that's what we're really trying to avoid with actual information, because, you know, everyone does have their own, let's say, method agenda around exactly what they want people to do to lose weight, because that's technically what's best for marketing. But if we actually look at the plain science and psychology behind weight loss itself, most people don't have a physical exercise nutrition problem. They have a psychological issue around consistent weight loss that's needed to be maintained for weight loss to occur in the first place and for it to be maintained in the long run.
Mm-hmm. You think this the sustainability issue can be solved with a calorie in, calorie out, like being more conscious about how many calories you're consuming and being more conscious about how many calories you're burning? Because a lot of people that I've met, they want to achieve a goal. Like, let's say they want to go for a vacation, or they want to get in shape for someone's wedding or a birthday. And once they hit that mark, they think it's like a free ticket to go out and do anything. And then they start complaining like, hey, I gained all that weight. And I was like, yeah, but have you seen yourself? You're drinking, you're not sleeping, you're kind of like not going to the gym. All the things that you did to get to a point, now you just don't do it. But my question is, let's say, for example, if someone is listening to this and they want to know what is their ideal calories that they should be eating, and then they want to go on a deficit, A, how do they know what's the ideal calories for them? And B, how much of a deficit should they start off with?
That's a very good question. So the first thing is, no one's going to know exactly how much less the number that we're going to say is maintenance calories is. So technically, you can use any calculator online to get a rough baseline based off of your weight, height, age, all of these things. But the thing is, what is really needed to happen is two things. So first thing is the tracking of those calories efficiently and accurately, not missing out, you know, sauces, oils, and all of this. So we have like a good number, and as much work as it may seem, as much difficulty as it may seem, you get used to it after a few days of doing it and becomes more enjoyable than anything. So using any app, like let's say MyFitnessPal, getting a rough baseline of where your calories are at and then what that averages out to in a week. And then the second thing is the actual weight, fasted weight in the morning. So this is, you know, we're saying is the most accurate time of the day to get a consistent measure of your actual weight when water weight is lowest. So before you eat anything, after you go to the toilet, that's the weight that we should be getting a measure of. And then third thing, technically, progress photos, what you actually look like in the mirror. So that's a good kind of baseline measure to have. But when we know that you're either not gaining or not losing weight at a certain amount of average calories across 2 weeks, let's say, right? That's where we can say your maintenance calories are there. If you've been dropping weight across those 2 weeks, we're going to say that you're in a deficit. But let's say we're losing a pound a week, right? And then that's going to be roughly where you kind of want to maintain, depending on your weight, as like your calorie deficit. So if you found your maintenance calories as to where you're not gaining or losing weight on average across 2 weeks, then we want to say drop around 200 to 300 calories from there. Right. And then it depends as you progress what the actual rate of progress actually is based on your body weight as well, that we want to adjust from there from. So that's where, okay. And of course, if you're gaining weight across the 2 weeks, we're going to say you're in a calorie surplus. And then we want to actually drop it further from there and then drop it further if needed. So that's essentially how anything weight loss actually works, anything fat loss. The issue isn't the first few weeks. The issue isn't the first month or the second month or whatever it is. It's usually when it comes to the third month, fourth month, wherever it is, where people either plateau or gain weight back. And then that's where the issues around sustainability come through. So when that's when everything that's difficult to begin with shouldn't have really been started in the first place. When I say difficult, extremely difficult to maintain in the long run, which is why like we want to actually get in foods that we actually like, foods that we can stick to, as well as our, let's say, quote unquote, healthy micronutrient dense foods, which are within our macronutrient ratios as well. So our higher protein foods, fiber, but the other meals are important, because if you're sacrificing the things that you enjoy for some short-term weight loss, and you know you're going to get cravings, binge, let's say 8 weeks down the line, 10 weeks down the line when the wedding comes up, that means what you started in the first place is quote unquote unsustainable. So that's why I think the programming around the foods itself is just as important as just the numbers behind it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something very interesting, which is cravings. Now, you know, I was an obese kid. I went through a lot of yo-yo dieting. I tried almost all kinds of diet out there. And a lot of people that I've met as well, there comes to a point where everyone's craving something, especially for me. It used to be in like the late hours in the night, because of course I was working out quite a lot, but I was not taking like a sustainable approach. I was undercutting my calories too much. And these cravings would come up, which would some days end into binge eating at night. So now that we know so much about like nutrition and science, do you have any techniques or any methods to kind of like reduce people's cravings?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. I used to be exactly the same. I used to do binge all the time. This, as you can imagine, one of the reasons why I got up to 97 kilos in the first place, the cravings itself, but 100%. So number one, I would actually look at sleep. So because of sleep's effects on your different hormones that do affect cravings at different times of day, and all the studies on the actual excess in calorie consumption purely from sleep, did a video on this which goes into a bit of detail. But anyways, the main thing is, first of all, looking at sleep. And then second thing is looking at your foods during the day. So the foods at night, the cravings, bingings at night aren't by accident. It's not a matter of, you know, you eat, I'm not saying you specifically, in general, it's not a matter of eating healthy during the day and then falling off at night being the problem. It's what you are eating during the day that sets you up for that craving, binging cycle at night. So in the beginning of the day, there's a few things that you can try. For some people, you know, intermittent fasting or some sort of time-restricted eating is not a bad idea to shorten that eating window. So that's one way where we can basically reduce the time span which you actually have more food in. So it's less likely that you binge. But, you know, for some people that actually causes overeating, but we won't go into too much detail in terms of that or the studies. But the other thing is the protein intake during the day. So usually people who are quite deficient in protein, we know that protein is the most satiating macronutrient, highest satiety. So it makes you feel the most full. So insufficient protein intake is one of the reasons why cravings might build up at night, but it might be more difficult to actually stick within a caloric deficit. So that's another thing that we can look at. Fiber intake. So the actual fiber, let's say from fruits, vegetables, whatever is within your calorie intake, is just as important. So people don't really believe this, but like when I was at 97 kilos, dropping weight to around, let's say even 80, I was eating more food in total than I was when I was gaining weight. And that's because what I was eating changed. It was more lower calorie, high volume foods, which were, of course, less calorically dense, but filled me up more. So not only that, the actual fiber intake from foods which I like berries, strawberries, these, I liked cauliflower, I liked cabbage, I liked lettuce, and making that taste nice, not just this plain thing that people think is what you have to eat, making that taste nice with the right seasonings, with the right zero calorie sources to keep it within a lower calorie intake whilst making yourself full, as well as lower calorie snacks. So I liked lower calorie chocolate bars, which were like 60 calories each. And I liked the zero cal jellies. And another little hack, I used to freeze all these berries and apples and stuff, and then have it slightly defrosted and chop them up, because it takes longer to eat because it's frozen. You can't just like chug a bunch of berries. And then that basically always made me a lot more full. And the time taken to eat makes you feel more full. And won't go into ghrelin, leptin, hormones or any of that. But the main thing is actually how full you're making yourself feel. Small little hacks, chewing gum and all of this, but also stimulants as well. Caffeine in the mornings. Technically, I also have I use nicotine spray as well. Didn't back then, but like nicotine spray, gum. I don't like the gum as much, but appetite suppressants, let's say. I'm not going to go into the cognitive side of all of this, but very interesting side, which I did lots of talks on. But like the main thing is actually making sure that you have some sort of thing which is going to make it more difficult to eat more later in the day. So front loading your protein intake and then back loading your carb intake later at night is not a bad idea. So that's one thing I did do alongside intermittent fasting, alongside using caffeine in my fasted windows as well. That's probably the main things I would say contributed to all of that. But the thing I would actually recommend for most people, because they're so deficient in micronutrients and fiber from the lack of vegetables and fruit intake, is looking at that as well. So okay. I don't know if that completely answered.
Yeah, it did. did. So you mentioned two things, which is, I want you to break these two terms down for someone who's listening: front-loading protein and back-loading carbs.
So essentially, having protein, lean protein, let's say, earlier in the day, and let's say if we're going time frames, if you're fasted, say 12 to 4, depending on when you wake up, 12 to 6, you want 70, 80% of your protein. If you're eating from the morning, then let's say 9 a.m. or 8 a.m., whatever it is, to 6 p.m., you want to get in 80%, 90% of your protein intake in. So you allow yourself to enjoy the carbs at the later end of the day. I mainly did this more for productivity and for mental performance more than anything else, but the enjoyment of the carbs, so you're not needing to worry about enjoying some foods, and it doesn't feel as restrictive. And also, you technically do have some effects on sleep, being able to sleep earlier as well, sleep better, sorry. But of course, keeping that within your, a little further away from your sleeping window, so it doesn't actually affect sleep as well. But basically, pushing that back to a later side of the day is what I tend to do most often nowadays as well.
Are there any latest, because every year there is some diet that is coming out and some people are experimenting with it. Of course, we know about keto and carnivore, and all of these ones have got quite a lot of attention. Any diets that are new and coming up that might be exciting to look at?
Honestly, I think that the optimizations around time-restricted eating is the best thing that is coming out that's most effective for most people. And I think in terms of health benefits as well, is probably the most productive for people to actually be productive in their day as well, which of course, I think pushing yourself to levels of difficulty with something like that and pushing yourself outside of those, outside of just the fitness thing, so you're feeling better during the day, you're doing more work, and you're feeling better about yourself, is very productive for fitness itself, because everything lines up. For example, someone who's a bodybuilder is, because they have the mental willpower and the actual strain around their discipline to push into, let's say, the business side of things, that's going to be just as productive as someone who's good in business, also translating that into fitness, because they're able to do more hard things and they're able to build up that willpower and discipline. So I think that's a very, very good measure of, a good strategy for a lot of people. In terms of new stuff, there's going to be something new every day. There's going to be some new supplement, new weight loss drug, or new or whatever it is. So there's going to be some 50 new brands of GLP-1 agonists, I reckon, that will come out next year. But there's always going to be that. But I think people need to very, very clearly have in mind that being in a calorie deficit is the only thing that matters for you to be able to lose the weight, regardless of what kind of route you want to choose.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned it, let's explore these two topics. Let's explore supplements and especially GLP-1 agonists. Tell people what this GLP-1 thing is all about and what are your views on it?
I, funnily enough, filmed a very long YouTube video, which hasn't been edited yet. It's recently on it. But this is the thing. For people who do need the drug, I would say it's a very productive drug for that situation, for diabetics, for people in that specific state. But the people who are trying to lose the next 10, 15 pounds and looking at it as like a, let's say, a shortcut or an easier way of appetite control throughout that, I would 100% say, like, look at your actual options in terms of appetite suppression before you even think about drugs, because it's not necessary or needed at that point as well. We won't talk about the actual specific medical concerns around all of this as well, because I think a lot of that's, it should be obvious to most people, but if they simply read, let's say, the side effects of it, 100% of that is very accurate, actually. It's not one of these things where it's like, read the label. It's very much proven for people who don't need that for them to be basically pushing inside, especially people who are not actually over-consuming food. So when people aren't over-consuming food and they also are using a GLP-1 agonist just to lose the next 10, 15 pounds, it gets into a state of basically them having these different effects on their face, the sunken face, the hollow look, which is not really good in, of course, what they're trying to achieve. And the people who are over consuming food as well, plus using a GLP-1X, it's everything around the nausea, the diet, the digestive health concerns, the of course, the nausea, the vomiting, everything that does come alongside that, and then the effects on insulin levels as well. We know that that's going to be very individual dependent as well. But honestly, completely two sides of the coin, depending on the person. It needs to be a very informed decision made around not just your own research, but of course, advice from your doctor as well.
It's interesting. The amount of people that I've met who are ready to not go to the gym, and most people just wanted to get the easy way out. So they're like, I wish I could get my hands on this Ozempic or Semaglutide or one of these brands. But A, it's expensive, and B, you have to inject it into you. So most people are not going to do that. But I bet if people can find some natural compounds that can mimic or stimulate this GLP-1, those supplement companies are going to make a lot of money, because people, when given the choice, will always take the easy route out, even if it comes with some side effects. What do you think?
Yeah, so this is the same equation that we want to actually use for every single thing in life based on value. People are going to, the perceived effort of the result is always going to be, if it's less, it's going to be more valuable to more people, and they will choose that route. But the thing is, it's not a case of them having the easy route. It's the case of misinformation or lack of information around exactly what else they can do. And a lot of the things they can do, they perceive it as more difficult because they haven't found something that works for them yet. And that's because everything that they've tried is very much like a cookie cutter approach as to what everyone else does, not necessarily what's best for them. So what's best for them is always going to be what they can maintain and sustain for a long run to get to that goal. Because even if they use an appetite suppressant, even if they use something to actually lose the weight in the first place, that doesn't mean they necessarily have more information on how to maintain that and how to actually improve from there with not just fat loss, but with actual lean muscle building goals, with training, with nutrition. That's all has to be in place regardless. So there is no real shortcut anyways, because even if you do heavily underconsume calories for a certain period of time on a drug, that doesn't mean you're not going to gain the weight back. And technically, you can still gain weight using any of the drugs as well. So anything supplementation-wise, even eating healthy, let's say, if you're over-consuming calories, even eating everything that you think is clean, because, you know, the foods that are pushed out as clean, let's say, the nuts, the peanuts, the dry fruit, all of this, these foods which are generally seen as part of a healthy diet and very much can be as well, can actually make people over-consume calories in a long period of time because of how calorically dense they are. So it's like, you know, when someone says they had a bunch of nuts and avocado on toast for breakfast because it has healthy fats in it and stuff, and then you look at their total caloric intake and they're over-consuming very consistently and actually gaining weight, that's not exactly productive for health if there's a consistent gain in excess weight when they're already overweight. So it's just a matter of information and education around this space that's actually really needed at this point.
Yeah, you eat, and you know, I completely feel that, because when you have a bunch of, like, especially for me, when I have a bunch of like salted nuts, man, if like you've got to stick to like four or five of like cashews or smoked almonds, you can never, I bet you, like, it's difficult to kind of, unless you're conscious enough to just stick to four, it just gets you. It just hijacks your brain and you want to grab the whole fist and sometimes the whole packet.
Yeah, 100%. And I always say, you know, it's easier to change your environment than it is to change your habits completely. So I always say, like, if you know you're going to overconsume a certain thing, like if you know it, you tell yourself you're only going to have five or six, I wouldn't buy it in the first place. That's what I would always say to most people who are like, you know, I get these cravings binge at night. It's like, you technically did have the choice to buy that food to keep it in your cupboard kind of thing, right?
So yeah, out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind is the best approach to any shopping approach. And, you know, don't start shopping when you're hungry, basically.
That's a good tip, yeah.
Is a good way to go about it. Especially in, for example, here in Dubai, when I was living in Dubai, everything's so easy with with Noon, with Talbot, whatever it is, all these delivery apps, right? Yeah. It becomes
There's so many.
You just click and it gets there in 15 minutes and you just see what's on the front page, or you search for certain things. You're like, oh, maybe I'll like this. Maybe I'll just keep this here and here and here. I would very much suggest, Devi especially, don't start mass shopping for like a week down the line. Start shopping for like a day or two. And then, because it's so easy to get to your door as well, like just do it as you go, because you realize you actually need a lot less food than you think on a short period of time. And then when you have more, you're more likely to actually reach for more food, and it doesn't seem as bad. But like, if you're getting down to your last snacks or whatever it is, then you're less likely to just keep eating, basically.
Mm-hmm. Two more components come here as well, and you mentioned them before. Willpower. One is willpower, so let's start here. When someone has to make that choice of, you know, grabbing that snack or the cookie or the donut or whatever, there's a voice in their head that might say like, hey, stop. And there's another voice in their head that says, okay, you know what? You've been working really hard. You deserve this. And that's where self-discipline and willpower comes in. Do you have any hacks or any tips for the self-discipline and willpower?
Yeah, 100%. So number one, first of all, having a goal, purpose around what you're doing, so you're not floating around kind of telling yourself you need to lose weight. So setting out a date that you want to be in shape for is probably the biggest thing that helped me, first of all. But in terms of hacks, there's a concept of urge surfing. So it's just a name for basically what you want to do is, you know, when you have this need to reach for a cookie, reach for a snack or whatever it is, number one thing I would do is stop yourself, wait 10 minutes, and within that 10 minutes, try and drink 500 milliliters of water. If you're still hungry after the 10 minutes, have the snack. But 90% of the time, you won't need the snack and you won't feel as hungry or won't have those cravings. So it's just that 10 minute rule of urge surfing. So if as soon as you have that craving, just look at the clock, wait 10 minutes, and then straight away drink 500 milliliters of water or a liquid. So that's probably the best tip I can give for someone that has consistent cravings. Or, you know, grab some gum, chewing gum. You'll realize chewing gum probably kills your cravings and gets rid of all your need for that very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I used to do a lot of calorie deficiting, one of the things that it would impact, at least for some time, would be my sleep. Do you see this with a lot of people? Like, if you're really undercutting calories, your sleep can be impacted in terms of sleep quality or sleep onset?
So it depends. Technically, cutting down your weight in general should improve sleep, and it depends on your body fat percentage at the time and how steep your deficit is. Of course, if you're at a point of like basically starvation and then lacking all your macro and micronutrients within your diet, and the deficit is too steep below your maintenance, then you'll definitely get to a point where pretty much everything's being affected, your energy levels, even your sleep. But it shouldn't be that case if everything's kind of done correctly, instead of like, you know, let's just throw this at the wall, hope it sticks kind of thing. And then you get to a point where everything downstream is affected as well. So I believe the actual programming around all of this is just as important as just the concept of a deficit. Because, you know, if we're, let's say your maintenance is at 2000 calories, right? And this is what you need to maintain your weight. The difference between going down to 1600 calories and 1200 calories is huge. Because if you're saying that you're dropping that heavily below your maintenance on a long period of time, at some point you can expect your hormonal levels, your sleep, your actual energy levels during the day to be affected. But if we're tapering down from, let's say, 2000, and you know that's your maintenance, you're not gaining or losing weight, you're not guessing that either, and you're not saying, you know, I'm kind of around there, you know that's that your maintenance after the data collection process, which no one wants to do but is needed, because, you know, it takes some time to get the data behind what's where you're actually at, and you know that you're dropping that by 200, and you know you're seeing this amount of weight loss, and you know that you need to drop that another 200 when you're plateauing around there, and you know that your macronutrient intake, your protein intake is at a minimum within that, then they shouldn't really be a problem. Like, there really shouldn't be any other issues. And then, of course, the the actual foods themselves, right? We can't technically go into, like, let's say a keto situation and you're completely depleting yourself of your carbs, and you're trying to train and you have completely depleted glycogen levels and you're trying to push yourself again and again. There's going to be more of a serious effect with muscle maintenance as well, and growth, and of course muscle loss with that on a prolonged period of time as well, that I think people are a little less aware of when it comes to going very steep in terms of a deficit. And then of course diet breaks, refeed days can also be looked into to maintain / keep it a little more easy to stay consistent on.
Let's talk about refeed days, or a lot of people know them as cheat days and cheat meals. What's your take on that? Is it necessary? How much should a person eat? Is it like a free ticket to eat whatever they want? Because a lot of people that I know, they would just be stacking thousands of calories and saying, hey, bro, it's my cheat day, or it's my cheat meal. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, it's very, very common. So the thing is, most people don't need a cheat day or don't need anything along that sense, because let's say they're 50 pounds overweight, or I keep saying pounds because I'm used to US, but anyways, say they're 20 something kilos overweight, mm-hmm. right? The reason a cheat day, or like I say, refeed day is needed, is when they're at a lower body fat percentage and they're consistently in a deficit for a prolonged period of time. The notion of a cheat day or refeed day only came about from the bodybuilders who go into extreme deficits on extreme periods of time to get bodybuilding ready. And then this very quickly transferred into the entire weight loss phase somehow. And then people used it as like an excuse to go out and do this, this, this. But the thing that most people miss out on, first of all, I wouldn't really call it like a cheat day. It's just a high calorie day, because mm-hmm. we're looking at weight loss as averages of calories across the week, across the 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And if we're just looking at totals, if we total up your entire calories for every day for a month, if that cheat day was heavily, heavily productive to an overconsumption of calories, then we shouldn't really be thinking of cheat days in the first place. But if we're, let's say, eating 1200 calories a day for 5 days, and then we're eating 1800 for 2 days, then our average is somewhere in between still. But if we're eating, let's say, 1200 for 5 days and then 4000 on 2 days on the weekend, then it's like, what exactly was the, first of all, extremely steep deficit needed for? And was this very much contributing to the so-called need for a cheat day? Because if everything is programmed right, you shouldn't really feel like you're needing a cheat day at the end of the week or at the end of a month or whatever it is, because these should be general tapers up and down in calories based on what you actually feel like eating, first of all. That doesn't affect your progress. We only really want to use refeed days, cheat days, when it's actually needed, when we're completely depleting glycogen stores and it's affecting training. But most people, they don't need, they're not going to be technically losing muscle that easily, because you will pull from the fat stores from having excess fat. You will pull energy from there. So it's a very confused concept in the space. Not saying that it's like a bad thing, or it's having higher calorie days is not needed. I think it's needed to an extent for most people to keep stuff sustainable, to have dinners out with their families, to go out and enjoy themselves on the weekend, when it comes to travel, when stuff's unexpected. It's just more about getting back on track instead of letting a cheat day become a cheat week and then a cheat month kind of thing, and then you've lost track of goals completely. So just getting back on it after a cheat day is the best thing that you can do. Even better is averaging down the calories for the rest of the week. So that's my 2 cents on, let's say, my calorie days.
What about when it comes to the whole exercise component? Is there a certain... So actually, I want to ask you 2 questions here. Let's start with this one. A lot of people think that you cannot build muscle while you want to lose weight, because of this whole notion that to build muscle, you need a caloric surplus, but to lose weight, you need a calorie deficit. What are your thoughts on this? Let's start here.
Funnily enough, just posted each video. Sorry, everything's coming straight to my head because I'm just...
That's great. I love that.
Anyway, so there's a few categories of people that can build muscle and lose weight at the same time. So one is, and first of all, completely newbie lifter. If you've never been following a program, if you've never been in the gym, you can definitely build muscle and lose weight at the same time. So the next is a detrained individual. So someone who is, let's say, used to have more muscle mass in the past, used to do this and that, and they were injured or something, and they're getting back into it. Those people also. The next is the people on anabolics. They can definitely build muscle and lose weight at the same time and lose fat specifically at the same time. And the thing is, I'm saying, you know, people are categorized into these. Majority of people, regardless of where they think they are at with training or nutrition, do technically fall into the category of the newbie category, even if they've been training for 3-4 years, because they've never really followed something that is heavily productive for their, first of all, training modules, which should be progressively overloading, and they really haven't actually pushed themselves. Or people feel like they're pushing themselves. They're not actually, they don't have any data backing that, and they also don't have any proper structure behind their exercise, which is progressing them. And the thing is, a lot of people also have never really optimized with everything else in terms of nutrition. So the base level with, of course, a progressive diet with the right macronutrient ratios, all of this, and then all the specifics within that around, let's say, meal timings, the micronutrient ratios, the sleep, lifestyle factors, everything else that plays in stress, that's never really optimized for 99% of people anyways. So most people are actually in the category of that where they can lose fat, build muscle, and it's only really the actually highly trained, highly advanced people who have been doing this very consistently with very structured nutrition training modules, which are progressing over a long period of time. Those are the only people that can't actually lose fat and build muscle at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And so this would be the reason why bodybuilders, they'll have like a bulking phase and then they go back to a cutting phase, correct?
So the reason why bodybuilders go into like a heavy bulking phase and heavy cutting phase is because their goals are very, very specific for putting on as much muscle tissue as possible in a constrained period of time and then cutting down as much fat as possible whilst maintaining growing muscle tissue before a competition to be absolutely shredded on stage and show as much muscle as possible. So for them, technically, going into heavy bulking phases is more productive regardless of the excess fat that they gain in that period of time. There is, of course, a cutoff as to what's actually productive in a heavy bulking phase and how much of that is actually lean muscle tissue versus fat. So there is a lot of studies based on this, which I wrote down actually, based on the limits of how much you're going in excess of calories that's actually productive for muscle gain. But they do this because they also, first of all, have the support of anabolics. So it's one thing they want to actually maximize in terms of their optimized hormonal levels and the drugs that they're using. But next thing is that constrained period of time is actually technically more productive for their muscle gain. And then their cutting phases are always quite extreme because they don't have any issues around the cycle. They're less likely to have issues around the psychological aspect with willpower, with discipline, motivation. Right. That's not 99% of people, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's only a very small group of people that it's actually productive for. Everyone else, it makes sense to go into like more of a lean muscle gaining phase where it's more tapering up rather than just a huge, here you go, eat 4,000 calories extra. And then let's hope that works, because most people actually suck at doing that as well, like consistently eating like a high amount of calories, which is why it's actually very difficult for bodybuilders in a bulking phase as well. So I'm not gonna lie, that's pretty much what I did as well when the first 3-4 years, like just gaining as much size as possible. As we found out, it wasn't very productive for just only lean muscle tissue. It was a lot of excess fat, which probably wasn't necessary.
Yeah, and this is the reason, exactly reason why I brought this up, because you said 99% of the people, it's not going to work for them. Yet 99% of the people are under this impression. They're always saying, oh, I'm on my bulking phase. And like, you see them putting weight all over their body, like they're getting chubbier. They're, you know, so much so that there is no muscle anymore. Like visually, you cannot see the muscle, but they're still going to say, yeah, I'm on my bulking stage. And after a few months, I'm going to cut. And I was like, doesn't look like there's any bulk.
It's the guys in the gym space who have only really the information and influence of the people around them who are in the bodybuilding space. So it's where, like, I think there's a lot of more education that's needed in that sense. So the main thing is just do as much research as possible. Honestly, if you want to go for a heavy bulking phase, as long as you're actually optimized with what you're doing and your training is very, very productive, then do what you like. I think it's my opinion, honestly, but just be very, very wary of the health concerns of extremely heavy gaining phases and then cutting phases as well, because the effects on, of course, cardiovascular health, even digestive health, with extreme amounts of food and the excess weight being held onto, isn't very great for health or mental productivity, which is why I stopped going into any sort of heavy gaining phase at all, really, because of the effects on productivity that the heavy amounts of food did have on me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, we spoke about Ozempic and semaglutide and all of these GLP-1 agonists, which is like a cookie cutter approach towards losing weight. And now we know on the other end of the spectrum, if you want to gain muscle, like you mentioned, anabolics, which is, it could be so many different things, but basically let's classify all of them under this category of steroids, which a lot of people are familiar with. So you could take steroids, put on muscle, all of that stuff. Is there a middle way somewhere where, let's say, for example, you don't have to get onto steroids, but there are certain things, it could be supplements, it could be something else. Recently, peptides are making their name everywhere. So is there some middle way where you don't want to go as extreme as steroids, but you still want to gain muscle much faster than the average person out there?
Honestly, so with what the main goal of, let's say, using anabolics is to have super physiological levels of hormones which are productive for building muscle. So testosterone levels most commonly. So the thing is, people are more using this alongside, let's say, 50% of all the other factors being optimized, because they're going to the gym, they think they're eating kind of right, but they're really not. If that was optimized from 50% to 90%, then even if they were on a cycle, that would be a lot more productive. Before, and you'll see, like, a lot of the people in the gym that you see that are on PEDs and using PEDs really don't look like they are. I mean, to most people, you wouldn't be able to guess. And they aren't really talking about it. They're not going to tell you because they don't want to tell you that they look like shit with PEDs in place as well, right? So that's one thing that people are misinformed about. It's only the people that look very, very obviously enhanced that people think is the effect of the anabolics. And then people in the younger generation or newer lifters are basically being moved into that because they think that's the outcome. When majority of the cases, it's actually 80% of the cases, most people don't actually look like they even lift or use anything. And then there's the abuse side of things, right? There's people aren't actually informed on the hormonal impacts and the long-term impacts of anabolics. I studied this for a long, long time as well with endocrinology around this. The long-term impacts and the use isn't used safely by most people. So even with, I won't go into too much detail around how it should be taken because it's prescribed wrong, even in TRT instances from the majority of doctors in around the world, not just in UAE, in US, everywhere, UK, doctors aren't informed on anything around this at all. They just know what a prescription looks like for this. So they're prescribing, let's say, what should be given in microdoses on a natural rhythm of the body's production in even a daily schedule kind of thing, as to once every 10 days or once 7 days with 1 milligram of an aromatase inhibitor, which is very, unproductive for health concerns and actual cardiovascular health. Anyways, so that's where a lot of people do have a lot of misinformation and are going down the dangerous path, basically, because nearly all the information they have is not good or incorrect, right? Next thing is the middle ground that you're talking about is number one thing is actually optimizing your nutrition and exercise. That's the absolute optimization of this, regardless of how hard people may think is your easiest way to actually gaining more muscle tissue in the first place, because whatever you try and add on top of that is next to useless, or let's say very unproductive for your goals regardless, and you're still gonna not look like how you want to or get stronger. Then the next thing is the base level of supplementation or the essentials, let's say, that are perfectly safe, creatine monohydrate, optimum post-protein intake if you want to use whey, the micronutrient intake and with vitamins, minerals, getting in a multivitamin mineral, omega-3s. So base level supplementation is going to be your next best bet. In terms of Peptides depends on what we're talking about exactly and which peptides we're talking about. So we have things that are more optimized for growth hormone output as well, or stimulation of growth hormone output. We have things that are used more for recovery, but it depends on the individual person. Honestly, it's another case of like, okay, do you want to, first of all, the person itself, how willing are they to actually subcutaneously inject themselves on a regular schedule and keep up with their own health reports? Because keep in mind, blood reports, the actual maintenance of that with blood work is just as important in organ image scanning as well. Organ imaging is just as important as well. So it depends on how it's straight. I really don't want to say that you should do this and this is your middle ground, because the person itself matters a lot more in this case. It's like, how up to date and how willing are they to be stay disciplined on all the other things that actually matter for you to get the outcome. And then honestly, I wouldn't even look into what's being popularized in the UFC space right now with SARM, selective androgen receptor modulators. I don't think that's what most people ask me about when they're like, let's look for a middle ground where you don't have to inject yourself. You're still having hormonal shutdown, which you still have to recover from with post-cycle as well, or if they're going on and off as well. You still have to kind of go down the same route with less effects. So if you're in that case where you're considering you're 100% set on that, then I don't see why you wouldn't actually just go for a TRT option at that point as well, because you're still shutting down appointments. But one option is a lot more heavily researched and we know the actual effects because it's a hormone that's produced naturally. So technically, if that wouldn't, it's like getting over the fact that there is a quick fix or the best route kind of thing with the facts kind of thing, the actual science-based facts around what's actually optimal. So the thing is, if we're looking at someone's blood work and they were deficient in and they're at a certain age and they're in their 30s, 40s, whatever it is, and they were consistently deficient in their testosterone levels and it was lower/below level range, then at that point, it's actually a better idea to go through a TRT protocol at that point, because the effects, the health effects of consistently low testosterone levels is actually just as negative as or more negative than having optimal levels of testosterone for men. I'm talking about men specifically, of course. And then you also would realize that 90% of that can be fixed through proper sleep, training modules, everything else that should be fixed actually before you even think about those options. So it's essentially, it's breaking down what would be specific for an individual before you jump into this is being the best, because I think a lot of people who are, let's say, trying to increase their growth hormone levels with GH modulators as well, so they, I don't think, understand the full effects of, first of all, how much growth hormone is actually needed for you to, instead of the 1-2 units that you may be increasing by a certain dosage of a peptide, how much is actually needed for building muscle tissue. Second of all, like the actual water weight extracellularly that you also put on for you to, if whilst using growth hormone as well, right? That's something that definitely needs to be kept in mind for, especially for people who are just trying to cut down, lose excess weight and this and that, right? You're technically covering up your definition of muscle tissue with excess water weight, but of course there are very, very positive effects of the growth hormone levels as well. So very much a matter of research, and I can waffle on about this all day, but I won't.
Yeah, we want to be mindful of your time as well. Now, thank you for sharing that. What are some of the bizarre things that you've heard or have come across this year probably around fat loss or fitness or muscle gain? Like what are the crazy things out there that people are talking about? They don't have to be real. I mean, they don't have to work, for example, but like,
I mean, there's a lot of myths with trends and stuff that were flying around. And there's a video I did recently filmed for YouTube. It's quite funny. Some of the stuff that come up in terms of myths, there's people that were saying, you know, if you put a mirror in front of you eating, you'll most likely eat less because you're watching yourself eat and you're only consuming. It's like, are you trying to develop an eating disorder? Is that purposeful? That's one thing I saw covered about. And then, you know, there's people doing there's people just trying to do insane amounts of running as challenges and I don't think that's very productive for someone that's simply just trying to build a healthy lifestyle, because they go from one extreme to another. And of course, everything's come across with the Liver King situation last year as well. And then the diets being pushed out there. So I think Eddie Amia recently blew up because he's so heavy on debating science. So it's, I think a lot of people have asked me about that as well, because once again, I say this a lot, right? It's always the people that sound the most confident and speak the loudest that feel that suddenly gain traction on social media for being factual, when it's so far from the truth in most of what they're saying nearly every single time, when majority of it isn't actually factually backed, and it's usually their own agenda. So, for example, I'm very much a proponent of what he's pushing around, having whole foods, and then that's being like a good thing around all of this. That's not what I'm arguing kind of here in this situation. It's the debate around, you know, is carries in, carries out even a thing kind of thing, and it's useless. When someone's so heavy on pushing that, you just already automatically know they haven't looked at any research or any evidence behind how fat loss actually works. They're just simply basing it off of what worked for them as like a bodybuilder or whatever it is, because they looked at carb macronutrient ratios. When you know for a fact that if he was eating more calories and he was burning, he would have been fat. Like if he was gaining weight, and no one would be listening to him, but he probably knows that as well. But you know, it's now just a matter of being very careful of who you're listening to as well, actually, because everyone's quite loud in the space now.
Yeah, and everyone's got the platform from podcasting, and you know, there are so many things. So please make sure whoever you follow looks at some sort of a science. Dr. Azri, it was great to have you. I have to catch up with you once you're in Dubai. And yeah, we'll probably do a part two. But my last question to you is, if you had a time machine and you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be? It could be around anything.
Around
weight loss, yeah.
I would have had mentors a lot sooner, because that was probably what built up the mental resilience to basically be doing anything and push me so far out my comfort zone, not just in fitness, in the business space, in everything that helps with mental cognition, productivity. When you have that level of accountability and that push, you basically force yourself into growth. So when you're so heavily forced into growth, you figure stuff out yourself as well. Even if it's not direct information, even if it's one thing that pushes you into learning more and more, it's like a snowball effect, basically. You basically compress the time frame, the time period that you want to actually improve on, and then you're basically 1,000 miles per hour going into it. I always think speed is so essential for everything. Like a lot of people's indecision and lack of process is behind the lack of action, because they are in more of a space of floating rather than you know, Parkinson's law, compressed period of time for you to do stuff, and then you do more stuff within that period of time. So I definitely think that was probably the biggest thing that helped me, and I would have done sooner, because I'm not saying I wasn't early on getting mentors like 4 or 5 years ago now, but yeah, it's probably the biggest thing.
Cool. Where can people find out more about you? How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, azri.zakariya. That's my Instagram where I post the majority of my stuff. That's probably the best place. I do have YouTube as well, same my name, Azri Zakaria.
And are you working on a lot of more YouTube content now?
We are. A lot of stuff. Editors plan on the background. Team is working hard because we decided to go more on long form. Growing our team as well. A lot of hiring going on. So if there's anyone that's looking for any roles. But anyways, yeah, no, that's it's all being built. Thank you.
Cool. Everyone, please make sure you go check out his channel. And that's it for today. This is me, your host, CJ, signing out of the Shift with CJ podcast. Everyone have a great day, a great week, a great lifetime. Go find yourself some mentors. Take care.
Thank you.
Cool. And with that, we have come to an end to today's podcast.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.